Hi, everybody. It's Carol Clark, and we are here for another episode of Build the Weight Loss Practice of Your Dreams. And I actually have a returning guest. It's been a little while since Shelly's been with us, but I have Shelly Smith, who is the owner of Premier Rapport. And she does a lot of really interesting things, and she's got some great perspectives that I think really help the practices that I work with or anyone else who's dealing with change, which can bring a lot of different emotions and situations that occur in a practice. So we're going to talk all things change today, and I'm going to let Shelly do a little introduction of herself, and then we will go ahead and dive in. Shelly?
Well, I am thrilled to be here today and be back today, so I certainly appreciate that. So yeah, you know, change is on both of our minds. It's amazing how much change we go through on a daily basis, and sometimes we, accept it, and sometimes it scares us to death, and it kind of shuts us down. So I look forward to the conversation today.
Right. And just so our listeners know, because you also do, she's really known as the culture curator and all things culture, and actually you do a daily podcast, don't you?
I do. It's called The Morning Commute, and then the longer one. So that The Morning Commute is just a little snippet to kind of get your energy focused. It's a culture constant, if you will. And then the Culture Hour is a little longer one that I do occasionally.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right. Well, let's dive right in. Right. So what sort of advice do you have? I work with practices, do some consulting, and we do a lot of different things that will involve change. And some of the changes that we get in a practice relate to a change in, we add additional services or a new physician maybe come into the practice. Those are just a couple of the pretty common ones that occur. And of course, it creates lots of different feelings, as you mentioned, you know, fear, anxiety, where do I fit in, that sort of thing. How can we help our team not only navigate this change, but also, you know, learn to sort of embrace it and help make it a more positive experience?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of us embrace change better than others. So the first thing is to, the preference would be to assume that people do not like change. So, which is not the case. I happen to embrace change. I love it. I thrive against it or with it. However, most people do not. So number one is, regardless of your viewpoint, is to assume that change is not a friend to those that you're working with or for, so vertically or horizontally. So the first thing to do is communication strategy is so important. I cannot stress that enough. So especially when it's monumental changes in staffing, organization, additional revenue streams, things that are really going to tug and sort of pull at people from a day-to-day functionality and or make them feel insecure about what's happening, why is it happening. So number one is put together a communication strategy. And I don't want that to be daunting to the listeners. I'm just thinking simple things. I mean, ask yourself, if you didn't know what was going on, if you weren't the driver of the change, what are some questions you might have? And just write those down on a notebook. Why are we doing the change? Why are we implementing XYZ? Why are we going to even update something as simple as maybe how we answer the phone or how we do an intake with a new client? So think about the questions that you personally would have, and then start to bring people in that you also know a little bit about what's about to come on, and ask them what kind of questions they would have. That will help you formulate the initial communication strategy for the immediate parties that need to know, and then ultimately, typically, your entire staff needs to know what's going on. And that also includes even some of your ongoing clients, depending on the type of practice that you actually have. So I'm going to stop and pause there. That would be tip number one, communication strategy.
Right. So communication, I agree with that. And I've always been one of those leaders who believes that communication is a really good thing and that people perform better when they are informed, just like our patients make better decisions when they are informed of the options available to them. So I think communication is a big thing. What do you recommend for the leader who may keep things a little bit more, you know, close to the chest or close to the vest, however the saying goes, but kind of likes to keep it kind of more private, and then versus involving more people? Is there a way that they can then they can help, you know, communicate that in a more effective, that's comfortable for them in terms of sharing that information. Because I know probably most everyone who's listening has been in a situation where when things aren't said, all of a sudden a rumor mill starts to churn, and then things go crazy. Things come out that aren't even intended or on the radar. So how do you help with managing that?
That's a great question. So number one, again, you start with asking yourself, hate to be repetitive, but asking yourself what information you might want to know or what you might assume if you didn't know, especially, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, we want to prevent things going sideways. So making a list of what are the changes going to entail, at what point that will help you if you're being guarded with, you know, kind of spoon feeding that information, mm-hmm. asking yourself who needs to know, when do they need to know, and how am I going to tell them? So, you know, starting with that list of all the moving parts, we'll begin to say, well, who in the office is going to need to know? And you can start to think through who is it going to affect, make that list. When do they need to know? You could think about when do they need to order a product or service, or is it a renovation, or are they going to need to interview or onboard? So, you know, depending on what those changes are, it helps you begin to not only your confidence of that transparency, and then it's okay to let people know, but then also you're doing it very proactively. You're actually creating the expectation of what the change is going to be, and you're controlling what that change is going to be. And then guess what? If the rumor mill starts, say that three times in a row, and things start to go sideways, you're already prepared because you've already thought through it, and you could quickly go to your go-to list, your guide about the rollout plan, and say, okay, you know, I was going to wait until next week, but listen, let's go ahead and talk about it now, but let's also talk about why I didn't tell you. So it wasn't because I didn't think you, you know, weren't seen, valued, and heard. It's that I actually was doing this very intentionally. And, you know, it's okay to talk about yourself, to say, so, you know that I'm a guarded individual, or, you know, as a whole, I usually don't tell everything that's going on. So I'm intentionally letting people know. It's not that I don't value you. It's not that I don't trust you. But there was reasons for, and I hope that you respect that, you know, I just didn't go out and make a blanket email to the staff or on changes. Does that help a little bit? So
that does, because I do think, you know, people respect honesty and a little bit of, you know, sharing a little bit of rationale for why you're doing what it is that you're doing.
Yes.
So sometimes what happens is, I'll give you a couple scenarios if you could help work through this, because I know you work closely with teams to help them manage in situations like this. But occasionally I'll come into a practice and we'll be adding retail sales. Mm-hmm. And there can be a sort of a dichotomy, so to speak. I'll have a group of people who are so pumped about it. And they're like, you know, our patients need this. They ask about it. They're buying stuff at, you know, places where, you know, other places we could provide them with such better products. We could teach them how to use, integrate it. And then there's this like split of the other people who approach it in a different way. And part of its personality, I know, but it's more of a fear factor. You know, it's going to change my job. It's going to add more work. I don't know sales. I have to be salesy. There's these like two different groups, so to speak. And so having to then merge them into one cohesive team. Do you have any tips for how to handle that? Since I think that's something that the listeners do run into, whether it's adding retail sales or whether it's adding another practitioner in the practice or another service line or something like that.
Yeah, no, and that probably happens more often than not, right? We've got the early adopters, and then we have the ones that are just, it doesn't mean that they're not bought in. They're just not ready yet, right? We haven't created the buy-in. So I'm a huge believer in small focus groups. So I think that you can kind of split intentionally. You can either mix those two groups together or you can intentionally split those groups. My recommendation is you split those groups into the early adopters, the ones that are like, get it, and have them give them some tasks and ways to start creating. What does it look like? What do you need? What are your suggestions? And then as they start to create some list and momentum. Then I would engage the other group and say, hey, listen, what are we missing? What are we not thinking about it? You know, kind of what's going through your mind? And you actually would want to give that to them in writing from a checklist, process flow, however, to allow them to think about it. And don't be surprised if they would prefer to give you one-to-one feedback instead of group feedback, because that could add to the fear too. They may not be as expressive in a group. Right. But they'll begin to check in and see that you're not going to go so fast that you're going to run over them, and that you really do value what it is that they think, and that you really want their perspectives too. But you'll just have to do it in a more deliberate manner. So again, asking very specifically, you know, what do you think about this line of product or service? You know, right. Why do you think people go to Walmart to get their supplies versus if we had those supplies here? You know, what kind of questions do you think or are you hearing now when, you know, people are sitting and talking or on the phone or what have you? So bringing them in far more deliberate, sure, and calmer instead of the group that's really all in it, just kind of let them go and then come aside and work with them more on an individual basis. And use words like, it's really important that I get your buy-in in this. It's really important that I really feel like I'm missing something. And, you know, you're a very detailed, deliberate person. What are we not asking? What are we not thinking about? If you were one of our clients coming back in, what would you think or say or do or what might? And it doesn't mean that you have to have everybody at 100% agreement. But what it means is you're allowing everybody to be heard. Mm-hmm. At the speed in which they want to be heard. So that would be my suggestion around that.
Okay. I understand that. I totally get that. I think people do react better when they're included in that whole sort of process. What do you recommend sometimes when you're doing something like that? It's a change. And so, you know, as a leader, you're always looking at who your team is, where they're best suited, and what needs to get accomplished, and what's the best way to take my team and accomplish this goal. And so sometimes when you're integrating something new, you may or may not need additional staff, but sometimes that's the first thing that comes up. So initially you'll have something new you're on, so it's like, well, we can't possibly do that unless we bring on a new team member. We need some more staff to be able to manage that. Whereas oftentimes, you can actually creatively adjust workloads and be able to accomplish the same thing, at least to trial it that way before you throw more resources at it, especially when you're wanting to make sure it's a profitable new endeavor and you're trying to make sure that you can join things and not just throwing resources to that. You want to make sure that you go about that a little bit cautiously. Do you have any recommendations for how to manage that when that's the first thing that comes to you, bringing in a new service or adding a service line?
Absolutely. I actually do this type of work with clients all the time who go through any type of structural reorganization. And mm-hmm. Again, we'll go back to how we opened up, you know, just that fear of the unknown. So yeah. Pulling together a task force, I'll take you from an A to Z. So when somebody's going through a reorg, which ideally that's what we're talking about, this bringing in retail, for example, could be a reorg. So from there, I actually will do one-on-one interviews with the leaders, the decision makers. And then from there, I'll do group interviews based on what it is that I heard, just to talk about what's working, what's not working. If you could literally redo the whole thing, what is it you would do and how would you do it? And then from there, I come up with themes. And then usually out of the themes, you'll come up with task force. And then you throw out the task force, you know, to the group and say, who wants to be on it? Who would like to be on it, but maybe also lead it? And so then you find the people who are really interested. They're either the early adopters and they're really jazzed up, or they're so interested that they want to participate and they just want to know a little bit more, but they're a little bit guarded. Mm-hmm. And then the task force begin to happen. You give them guidelines. And you say, literally, create it from scratch. You know, it's almost like saying, here's your Lego blocks. I'm not going to give you what it is you need to build or how you need to build it, but you tell us what needs to be built. And out of that, you get people looking at job descriptions as they are now and saying, you know what, it's never made sense that I did blah, blah, blah. I think maybe we should shift this over to and maybe have a group of people who are capable of doing this, or this should be a new position. And or they come up with, if we pull these things out, then I can be more customer service focused and I will fill my time instead of doing paperwork. I can fill my time on the phone or talking to clients when they come in. But then this is going to create two more jobs. And these are the suggested duties we think, we as in the task force think that that person would need to do. And then you get to a stopping point where the task force or the task force leader comes back to the owner and says, this is what we came up with. So it just creates this whole beautiful buy-in and allows people to, number one, talk about their fears of, well, what's it going to do? If you pull that off, what am I going to do? Well, you love talking to the clients. You don't ever get to call people back like you want to every month. Wouldn't that be great? Oh, right. Yeah. And so it opens up all those possibilities. The key thing is, you may not implement, you probably won't implement everything that the task force group comes up with, but you will be able to do one, two, three, or four things out of that. Mm-hmm. And then they're, again, really going to feel seen, valued, or heard. So now the next time you do something, their guard's going to be right where you want it to be, and they're going to be really comfortable giving you the opinion. So that's, again, best practice. I happen to do it all the time in the midst of doing that with a